accidentally party a bit too hard and wake up on a plane to Pakistan.
Back in bold. Oh, my first recording back in Europe, and I got a great guest, a dude that's like, he's mysterious. Okay, I seen him on someone's viral Instagram reel, and it was about, matter of fact, I have the video. Hold on, we're gonna play this first.
As an American, I have a unique responsibility to make a pilgrimage to foreign McDonald's. Here's my top two so far. Rome's first McDonald's is like a museum. I got some sort of chicken pesto wrap, not bad. This one in Luxor, Egypt, is directly across from Luxor Temple. Side note, don't get KFC in Iraq.
Yeah, so I saw this and I'm like, okay, this is funny. I've kind of seen similar things before, but then I started trying to find you, and I did, and you had a bunch of funky content, not like your cookie cutter traveling, you know, type of gig, and I was like laughing at this stuff. I'm like, who is this kid? But like, you didn't speak. It was like, you know, there's like this mystique about you, you know, and then we started becoming friends on the Instagram and whatnot. And I still don't know anything about you. I know you're in France. I know you're American, but little Chris, it's a little world, man. I'm happy to finally meet in the virtual world. Tell me, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Yep. Living in France now. C'est la vie.
Oh, what is it again? Salud? No, it's Italian. No. What do they say in France?
Oh, man.
Cheers? Salute?
Salute, maybe.
Salute. Okay. What do you mean, maybe? I thought you speak French.
A little bit, but I hang out with a lot of Americans here, so.
I got my huge April spritz for my European special, you know, back in Europe. Homemade, no ice cubes, you know, just a lot of Prosecco and April, a little club soda. But little Chris, my man, what are you doing in France, first of all, before we get into the dangerous Middle East stuff, but all these off the beaten path places you've been. What the hell are you doing in France right now for?
So I came here for school, and I initially visited 3 years ago, just as a little European trip, 1 week in Paris. So met somebody that made it better, hanging out and. I don't know, something about Paris, it's just unlike anywhere else I've been. Beautiful, you know, you can walk around for hours, but now I'm getting kind of bored of it, to be honest. And the French people, not much could be said about them that hasn't already.
So, yeah, a lot of stereotypes are true with the French. I heard if you get outside, you know, into the... Was it the northeast part? It's kind of decent. And then Bordeaux. I heard Bordeaux is actually pretty solid. I got a good buddy from there. But, okay. So something made you go back to Paris. But that was 3 years ago for just a little Euro trip. But I've seen you've been to a hell of a lot of places in those 3 years. So it was like the first Euro trip like out of high school or college? Like,
yeah.
And then you got addicted to the bug and you just kept traveling or what?
Yeah. So I had never left the country before. And my family never really traveled. I mean, we did the Disney trips and the camping and stuff, but we never went international. I turned 18 in my last year of high school, and I actually saw the Aladdin movie, the live action one with Naomi Scott, and really put me onto the Middle East for some reason. So I started looking into the countries, and then that really got me into geography. I take those online quizzes. And then COVID hits. And then I'm 19 at this point, and I had really wanted to travel after high school. Couldn't for a while, but that January of 2021, I took my first trip outside of the country. I went by myself to Egypt, actually, and I spent a little over 2 weeks there. And then from there, I would, just work a ton and travel as much as I could.
Okay, so the live performance, it caught a Middle Eastern bug. Was it the mystique of the culture or how foreign it was? You said your parents weren't too world travel-y either. So I assume where'd you come from? The Midwest, the sheltered background, like enclosed or where?
No, I came from Connecticut. So
Okay, so the East Coast.
they just my dad was in the Navy, so he visited
Oh,
with no
okay.
passport a few places, but they just never really felt the need to travel, the want, I guess. But I guess I kind of did. I saw the movie and something about the I always liked history, so it just sort of made but that sort of clicked like oh yeah, these places exist. Might as well go check them out.
Yeah, no, I haven't quite made it to the Middle East or Africa. No, yeah, I haven't. But I'm really into Alexander the Great and shit like that. So like, I definitely want to do that whole route. Obviously, and this is what I'm gonna get to is, the danger and you have to do the weird visas and all the terrorists. And obviously, I've been doing this traveling for a minute, and I've learned that a lot of that is blown out of proportion. The danger, obviously, it can happen to you, but it's quite rare if you're not too stupid. So this Middle Eastern adventure, your parents, your father was in the Navy. Were they worried a little bit? And as after Egypt, when you handled that quite fine, they're like, okay, he's ready to go to Iran and Iraq and hang with the terrorists in Pakistan. I mean, what's going on here? Bring me through the timeline and how you were able to make this work.
Yeah, so Egypt was the first trip I went on, and I sort of said I was gonna go, and my mom was like, whatever, like I can't stop you. And my dad was like rationalizing with himself, like, oh, you're gonna be with a tour group. It's gonna be, just no tour group. But yeah, people.
At 19?
Yeah.
Geez. Okay.
So yeah, he was just thinking like plenty of people have been to Egypt. It's, the pyramids. Everybody's been to Egypt, so you should be fine. And then after that, the next country I went to was Ecuador, and then they were all, South America. After that, the third country I went to was Kurdistan in the north of Iraq. So at that point, they just sort of gave up. I think they don't really ask too
Wait,
many
that was the
questions.
third country you'd ever been to. I thought you could you go to Europe before Egypt?
No.
So you went Egypt to Ecuador to Kurdistan. Okay, yeah, that's a quite a beginner's solo traveling route.
Yeah, it was it's definitely not what most people do. I think most people start with like Europe, work their way to Mexico or Thailand. But yeah, I started with Egypt. I think you learn a lot of the stuff takes people longer to learn elsewhere. But maybe in Egypt, it sort of speeds the process up a bit. Definitely paid much more for the taxi, that sort of stuff than I should have, but that's all a learning opportunity. And you pay more in Egypt, it's not so bad.
That's actually a good point. Like just diving into the deep end right away to get a crap ton of experience, and then you're gonna have no worries in Naples. You're gonna have no worries in the Riviera of Mexico because you dealt with the Egyptian hustlers and so forth. You always read about these things, especially on Reddit. They say, "Where's the worst country you've been to?" And everyone's like, "Egypt. Oh, they hound you. They take advantage of you. You touch the camel, you owe $100." But I think that's a good idea. Someone should just get thrown into the fire.
Yeah.
I think some people they might get turned off by it though, the travel bug. Obviously you didn't, but kind of lean into that. What did you learn from this first solo trip to Egypt?
Well, that's the thing. When you start with Egypt, you have nothing to compare it to besides home. So obviously it's going to be different. What did I learn? Definitely taxis are a big thing. Like never trust a taxi driver. Never trust anybody, basically. It's rare that people come up to you and just want to be friends, but it does happen because a lot of people with a Western mindset might see a Westerner and want to talk to them. So weeding out the real people who want a genuine connection or a conversation from the people looking to make a quick buck, that's definitely a skill that's comes with time. And then you've got to get confrontational with some of those guys, obviously, because they are persistent. So getting confrontational is definitely a big thing. And knowing your limits as a tourist, what you can and can't do. Like in Ethiopia, you could just beat the hell out of whoever trying to rob you or something. In Egypt, that might land you in some trouble.
Yeah, that's a very good point, dude. Because this last year, I was living mostly in the northeast of Brazil. And I'd been through the rigor in the Mexican Riviera with the hustlers, Thailand, plenty of places in Europe. And so I was in the northeast of Brazil. And these street people selling, you know, on the beaches and whatnot, would come up to you. And I just don't even pay attention to them, right? I just don't even think they're there. Don't even act like they exist, because that's what I'm used to having to do, right? And, you know, my people that'd be with me were like, what are you doing? Like, they're just trying to, like, if you want it, you don't need to talk to them. Just say, no, obrigado. Because the people in the northeast of Brazil are very genuine, right? And they get their feelings hurt super bad. So this whole time, like, I'm making people feel like, you know, like they're the shittiest person in the world for selling stuff on the beach, because that's normally how you have to react. Because other people in the Mexicos and the Thailands, they do this for a job. They don't care. Like, they're so over rejection and whatnot. But I was being the biggest asshole in the world on the beaches in the Northeast. But it reminded me of your confrontational point, is so many Americans especially just get taken for everywhere because they're super, oh, yeah. Oh, you like my shoes? Really? Oh, where am I from? Oh, I'm from Minnesota. You know, here's what we do there. They don't give one fuck about you. You know what I mean? And then they're going to play the pity game. They're going to get some money out of you. And all of a sudden you're dishing out money, you know, left and right, or getting in tough situations, right? So that comfort, being confrontational and putting your foot down, I think is a massive travel skill people need to learn, no?
Yeah, I think you definitely need thick skin. You can't give money to everybody if you're in a, you know, poorer area. And there's going to be some kids. You can't feed all the kids, right? But definitely, yeah, confrontation is a big one. A lot of people don't expect it. Like, I was in Morocco. This guy was walking, and, you know, I walked with him to this leather tannery where they tan leather for selling purses and whatnot. And there's a bunch of signs that say, like, entry is free. There's no tours. Don't pay anybody. And I had read about this scam, and I was falling for it, kind of. I just wanted to see what happened, I guess. The place was terrible, not worth seeing. Walked around, it just smells terrible. And I left after maybe like 3 minutes. And then the guy's like, of course, asked for the money for the tour. And then a big group just surrounds, you know, out of nowhere pretty much. And I think they were shocked that I refused. I don't think many people refuse in that situation, which they should. It's just a dishonest way of making money. I get that they need to make money, but that's not the way to go about it.
Did nothing happen to you? I heard they spit on you and throw rocks at you in Morocco. Is that true or no?
No, that's Ethiopia where they throw the rocks. I don't.
You got rocks thrown at you in Ethiopia? Ethiopia?
Yeah.
I know Somalia went through the civil war, and Somaliland is decent. Another part is the total war zone. But I thought Ethiopia was going through some crap too. Were you there during that time?
Yeah, I was there this past summer, 2023. It was, I think, still going on, but it's mostly in the north in a region called Tigray. So the capital, Addis Ababa, I was going to travel around, but it was so bad that I left after 5 days. But the capital wasn't seeing the violence or anything, but the refugees were there, so that was causing some problems, I think.
Okay, so Egypt, you got through with a couple scars, but nothing too crazy. Was it like an experience where, like, holy shit, I'm addicted to this solo travel living, I feel so free? Kind of like when you were wrapping up and you're getting on the plane to go back home or wherever, what were you feeling after that first solo travel adventure?
It was weird because it was exhausting in a lot of ways, but yeah, I just couldn't wait to get out again and do more. And at that time I had, all the money but no time. And right now I'm kind of the opposite. But yeah, I just couldn't wait to get out again.
Okay, what about the history though? You went through all that stuff. Was it as beautiful and crazy as you expected? Because that's what I'm really interested in. I want to go stay in Luxor for like a month, see all the ancient, you know, tombs and whatnot. Obviously do the pyramids, but I want to go through the Nile. Is the history all it's worked up to be?
The Egyptians will hang me for this, but no, probably not. I mean, it's beautiful. But a month in Luxor, I wouldn't do it. And the thing about Egypt is it's very, very dirty, which is normal. It's to be expected in a lot of countries. But like if you're creating content, if you're making videos and stuff, the Egyptians will just go in on you in the comments for recording a street even. And even the temples, because they don't take care of them. So the temple's filthy. You know, there'll be a staircase to an ancient tomb, and it's blocked off, and there's a bunch of Doritos bags and stuff. So yeah, Egypt is definitely, the history is not what it's cracked up to be. There's other places that I feel like Iraq, for example, super rich history, obviously, is the cradle of civilization. And I think they take better care of their stuff. From what I've seen. So I would recommend Iraq, honestly, over Egypt. And for the scammers and hustlers as well, none of that in Iraq.
What, I've noticed that too. I remember the Cleopatra documentary. They got so mad because they were trying to do the whole blackwashing thing, right? The Egyptians were like, stop screwing with our history. And they seem like very defensive people. And I've noticed this is a lot of third world type countries. Like, if you talk bad about their country, even though they talk so much shit about it, you'll get thrown up on the lamp pole, right? But why is it you think Egypt is so – now, you only spent 2 weeks there, so it's kind of probably hard to really understand everything. But why do you think it's so dirty and fucked up?
I actually went back for another 2 weeks. So all in all, I think a month.
Okay.
But as for the nationalism, I think that's don't quote me on this, but when all those places were once like the Ottoman Empire, and Egypt hadn't really ruled itself for a long time, right? Because the Greeks and the British, and I don't think Egyptian had been ruled by an Egyptian for, you know, most of its history. And now all of those countries that weren't ever countries, such as like Iraq and Syria, now they become countries. The way to be a country is to make the people extra nationalists, to preserve whoever's in power or whatnot. So
yeah, I know they had a lot of issues. When I was living in Bologna, they would have these huge signs everywhere about this Italian that was imprisoned in Egypt for, they said, being an activist or whatnot, and the European Union couldn't do anything about it. So I know they got a heavy hammer. I've read horror stories about like the content dudes going down there and getting their cameras confiscated or paying huge fines. Does that happen to you?
Yeah, I was walking around just a normal looking street in downtown Cairo, just recording with my phone like this. It was just pretty much a market, right? Food stands and such. And I was with a friend that I had met. So we were going around trying some of the street food. So I'm recording, this guy comes up behind me and puts me in a chokehold. It's a short little Egyptian man. So I kind of just push him away, and then he like goes for something in his pocket. And then, everybody's pretty much gathered around. People are yelling. My friend's screaming, he's American. What are you doing? This guy's like furious, trying to get my phone. And eventually we figure out he just wants me to delete the video, which I do. I go into recently deleted and recover it. There's no people in the video either. I don't know why it was such a, you know, strategic location that I couldn't record. There's no military guys. I know that's a bad thing. There's no government buildings. But for some reason, that street's just off limits. And there's no signs, you know, so It's impossible for tourists to know the rules. But I saw Egypt recently passed a law where if they don't deem the spot as a beautiful place, then you aren't allowed to take photos. I think this is in response to that Food Channel guy.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, I think that was a law in response to his video where you can't take photos of everything there. If it's compromised the vision of Egypt.
Yeah, it hurt their tourism for sure, too, because I think they make a decent amount of money off tourism, right?
I think most of their money comes from tourism.
A decent chunk. Okay, so relating to this Egypt, and then also you can talk about the other countries you've been to. I think the Westerners have this idea, too. You hear about it all now, like, oh, we're so authoritarian, and, you know, the government is taking away our freedoms, which I don't necessarily disagree. But I think when you go through places like this and you realize, like, okay, damn, we've had it pretty decent in the West, and you're not going to get chokehold for recording things if you're a tourist in the USA. And what do you think about that? About how, you know, you see on the Twitters and the Instagrams that people are like, oh my God, we're not free anymore. And, you know, compared to these other countries you've been to.
Yeah, I think it definitely puts it into perspective. But at the same time, we get to talk about it. We get to talk about all of our problems. I think that's a big thing about America's image abroad, where people are less likely to talk about problems elsewhere. So our problems get magnified through us being able to talk about it online. And obviously America dominates the media, so they see all our stuff. So I think, yeah, that's a big part of it, just being able to talk about it. Definitely puts it into perspective.
You're 1,000% right on that. The amplification of our craziness and issues and people bitching and pouting in the West. And I think a lot of it is even pushed further by, you know, the enemies of, if we're talking about USA for sure, like the Russians, the Chinese, and the governments, I should say. I definitely think they have accounts that are huge. You know, they've done studies on this, like a ton of the top conservative groups were started in Russian troll farms, you know, and they get, you know, the what's the old people call us? The boomers all riled up, and there's, you know, on both sides, the left and the right. I heard about this one time, these Russian troll farms started like a huge, like, far right movement gathering. And then they got the leftists to join the gathering together because they're playing both sides to create this huge turmoil thing. And so I think that's a great point you made, though, is that we're allowed in the West to bitch and moan about all these different things. But someone in quote unquote, the third world or places like this, you know, they're just trying to survive and they don't want to catch the wrong eyes of an authoritarian government and all hell breaks loose. So yeah. I think people don't really realize that much.
I think a big problem with that as it relates to travel. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but a lot of people will going to, you know, outside of Europe, is that a lot of people in less developed places, less access to, like, education, the internet, they'll assume that every Western man is gay and every Western woman is some sort of, you know, promiscuous woman. So there's a lot of unwanted touching coming from that. You know, I was just chilling on a bench in Baghdad, minding my business. Some old guy comes up and tries to reach for my crotch. So I think that's a big problem around the world, that they don't know that not all of us are gay.
That's fascinating. And I think that might have to do with the strong polarity in these Middle Eastern countries. But, like, for me, I've gone to a lot of, like, off the beaten paths in Europe and South America, Latin America. Even Southeast Asia. And I think they have the old perception of the Hollywood films. It's slowly turning. I've noticed a huge shift since COVID. So I think the TikTok has been a freaking Trojan horse for sure, amplifying the worst of the worst. But when I go off the beaten path in these places, it's like, oh my God, you know, is everyone in the USA, you know, rich and like living like the California dream? And normally, you know, like I told you, I've been back in Europe, so I'm eating cheese, I haven't got a haircut, I'm being a little lazy. I look good. You know, I walk around, I'm not a little short guy, I'm not fat. And I get the feeling that it's like, oh, this is, you know, what the movies, the American dude is, you know what I mean? Now, if you go to like the Rios, if you go to the Cancuns, they know what the majority of the Americans look like, you know, like nowadays where it seems like everyone's fat, you know, everyone is sloppy, the TikTok version of us. But that's curious, and I'm very interested to see if I'll go to the Middle East and they'll look at me and be like, oh my God, this dude is feminine because he wears, you know, farm, you know, these loud shirts and so forth. So I didn't notice, I didn't hear about that at all, that you, the experience that you had that were viewed that way in certain places.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not everybody, obviously, but, you know, the some of them see a Western dude and it's just their one shot, you know, because they'll be rejected by their local community if they try with anybody else.
Okay, hold on, let's get back on path here. So Egypt, and now we go back home to make more money and we say I'm gonna go to Ecuador. Why? Ecuador just had a freaking gangs take over the capital. What was the idea behind going there?
Yeah, so that was before that. The idea was that I found a really good flight to Ecuador, so I just decided to head down there. I was doing school at the time, so I did online school from my hotel room in Quito. And I spent 3 weeks, I believe, two or three, maybe two and a half. And I didn't really do much, but mostly just city living in Quito, which a really nice place, but for 2-3 weeks, maybe excessive. Not a whole lot going on, but the air was nice and empanadas were great. So I would definitely go back and explore the rest of the country.
Okay, so you were doing online school at this point, and how were you making money? Did you go home and work and then decide to jet out, or, you know, how is a student affording this? I know obviously in Latin America you can find good deals for sure, but yeah. You know, people are interested in this idea.
Definitely. So my first thing was working at a restaurant. I was pretty much just a cashier, like fast food. But, you know, everybody's tipping in America now for any position. So I had a tip jar. So I made pretty decent money doing that. And this was the time of COVID. So pretty much everybody was a investor. And it was hard to lose money. Very easy to just day trade and have no risks involved. So I made a decent amount of money doing that. And then I went away for a summer, lost that job, but came back and I got a job at a bar as a line cook and dishwasher. So I was just cooking food and washing dishes. And that's been my on and off job for the last maybe 2 years. And then I did a little bit of babysitting in France, but quickly quit that. It was not for me.
Yeah, you remind me of a dude I met going through the Sacred Valley in Peru, a Canadian guy, one of those richer regions up there. And he was a pizza dude, like delivering pizzas. And he's been doing that for like, I think, 6 years, and takes like 4 or 5 months off during the year and travels with that pizza delivery job. So like that was like the old kind of stereotype that, you know, the American could do like a shit job for 6 months and go travel for another six and, you know, live like a king. I don't think it's as crazy as it is back then, but the dude was doing it just fine. He's like, yeah, I'm staying at hostels, but, you know, I'm still doing the awesome Machu Picchu trek. You know, I'm having a beautiful time for months on end. So I think, this is a cliche thing, but a lot of Americans just never realize that there's more to spending $2,000 at an all-inclusive, week-long, hotel in Cancun, right? That money can go for a month, 2 months outside in the city center of Cancun to this day, for $2,000, you know what I mean? So is that something you've ever battled with when these people see you in all these different places? They're like, how did you get all this money? You know, your Navy daddy is paying you to travel the world.
Definitely. Yeah, they don't really, they don't support me like that. But definitely something most people would say, that must be easy with your dad paying. But yeah, I worked a lot, and one thing about me is I've never really stayed in a hostel before. Most of the time, I could find a hotel, $5 to $10 a night, like in Iraq just recently. I'm not saying it's a great place by any means. I would stay there again, but I have a video of it on my TikTok, kind of, I don't want to be mean because the guy was nice, but the sheets clearly haven't been washed. Some Spider-Man blanket. The windows were all smashed in, and the door didn't lock. There was a door to the outside that I said in case I need an escape route, which might have been true, judging by the place and shared bathroom with like a squatty potty, which is pretty rough if you're eating questionable foods. But yeah, there's hotels to be found all over the world for pretty decent prices.
Yeah, but I highly recommend people, especially when they first started doing some solo traveling, to try the hostels. I've had some crazy experiences in Europe, especially. I've done a couple in Latin America. By the time I went to Southeast Asia, I didn't need to stretch the budget that much. So I didn't do the 64 person rooms or the crazy stuff they got going on down there. But the experiences you have, the people you meet, I mean, I have stories on stories. One is in Paris. One is getting punched in the face in the middle of the night in a Paris a hostel in the red light district. It's a good like
None of the
welcome
stories
to.
were ever good. There are always people
What's
getting
that?
peed on
Yeah,
but
it's
definitely content. Definitely interesting.
Well, I really want to do it because a hostel in Eurotrip, a hostel which Tarantino helped out with. He didn't direct it, but it's a famous horror movie, I think 2005, where these Americans do their European trip. It's kind of like Eurotrip, but the dark version, the horror version. And I'm like, damn, that sounds so cool, like a hostel and beautiful Euro chicks and everyone's getting drunk so I've had great experience doing it, but now I'm getting older and it doesn't excite me anymore. So, but everyone else, you need to try hostel life at least once. Americans are like, this is crazy. How could I ever do that? But one, you save a ton of money, usually in the city center. You meet just characters. You learn so much about different people and in the world. So, but I do agree with you. You can find. I was in Chiang Mai 2 years ago, and I was staying at a place for like $12 a night. It was nice. It had just outside the walls of Chiang Mai, so great location. It had a pool, your own bathroom. They would come clean every day. You had free coffee, some breakfast in the morning for $12 a night, right? In Chiang Mai. Chiang Mai is not what Chiang Mai was, 7 years ago when people were living on $200 a month. Like now it's, more digital nomad ized, and I still found a place for $12 a night. So you can definitely find deals if you, go to where everyone else isn't necessarily going. Okay, Ecuador. So no big realizations from there, no interesting tips.
No, not really. There's just, I was just going to the same empanada place every day. Wasn't really doing much, but I'd definitely like to get back out there. But then, like I said, after that, for the summer, I went to Kurdistan, Iraq, and then that trip, I think I went to Kurdistan, Turkey, Morocco, and then France.
Okay, so hold on. You were in Ecuador when?
April 2021.
Okay, 2021. Now, hold on. So you went back home. You started working, I assumed, right?
Yeah.
And then your next place, where'd you go?
Kurdistan.
And that was end of April 2021?
No, that was around July. So I think I did 2 months abroad in the summer. And that was the
Okay,
start of
two.
my, I started doing bigger trips, going to many countries after that.
Okay, so what was the mindset switch after Ecuador? You're like, okay, hey, I'm gonna try to stretch this as far as I can, or what was kind of the mindset? And how did you get a Kurdistan ticket? And what was the idea behind going there to start it off?
Okay, so first of all, tickets very simple. Just buy them like any other place. Why though? That's a good question. I really was interested in Iraq. I always have been. So I just did my trip there recently. But even the north, the Kurdish region, has so much fascinating history. Everything they've been through, Saddam and the fight against ISIS. So I feel like it just called for me. But yeah, I'm sorry, what was the first question? I was working backwards.
I was refilling my Aperol Spritz. I said I had to get a little buzz for this episode. So, okay, what was this big jump? So, okay, yeah, Egypt, a lot of tourists go there. Ecuador, it's gotten really popular. Now we're going to go to freaking Kurdistan where there's wars all the time. Like I said, how are you flying in there? I mean, I travel a lot and I bet I could find this ticket there, but it's not something that just pops up on Google Flights. Probably get a bunch of warnings and whatnot. And what was kind of like, the reason of the 250 some recognized countries that we're going to go to this spot first.
Yeah, so like I said, it just sort of called my name. As for warnings, that's what's surprising. There really are. You could just go wherever and nobody questions it. The security at the airport might, but that's usually coming back where they'll ask me why I was there and all that. But going there, it's pretty straightforward. They do like to ask for hotel reservations for some places. So Kurdistan was one of them, and I'm the kind of guy who shows up and walks to try out a few different hotels to see where I really want to stay. So usually in that situation, you just show them a screenshot of a place on Expedia. You don't have to pay for it, no confirmation. You just show them the name of a hotel, and it's fine. So yeah, flying in is very straightforward. When I landed, though, I went to immigration, and it's a visa on arrival for US citizens. And they've got a booth off to the corner, which I didn't see. So I just try walking in. And this guy is just no English, just keeps demanding my military ID. And I say, I'm not military. And he says, military ID, you need one. And I said, but I'm just a tourist. And he doesn't get that. So eventually somebody else comes over. And I explain that I'm just a tourist, I'm not in the military, and they send me over to get my visa. Very straightforward. You just pay, I forget what it was, maybe 75 US dollars, and then they stamp you in. And then not a lot of people showing up there. I didn't find a taxi, so I had to sort of walk to the city from the airport. But then somebody came and picked me up. So I did a little bit of hitchhiking upon arrival, brought me to the edge of the city, and yeah.
Wait, who picked you up? You didn't know him, right?
Not just some random guy, but that's just kind of the culture there, helping people out without asking for anything. And definitely interesting after, visiting Egypt, that these people, maybe they're Kurdistan's economically well compared to a lot of other places, but even so, they'll help you without asking for anything, which is an interesting cultural shift.
Yeah, I've heard that actually in the Middle East that people have some of the best, most hospitable times ever. Get invited into homes, have dinner, anything you need, wash your clothes, etc. And that was the experience you've had, being around these countries, no?
Yeah, for the most part, definitely. Egypt, Morocco, kind of exceptions, but that's most likely not due to the culture, but the tourism, because tourism is a big part of their economy. So a lot of people doing the scams and stuff, but you won't find the scams in like Lebanon and Iraq. I haven't been to Jordan really. I spent maybe a day there, but I assume it's leaning more towards Egypt.
Okay, so Kurdistan though, this is your first kind of real off the grid type traveling here. What kind of lead me through the experiences, the eye-opening moments? What stuck with you through this adventure, and how long was it?
I stayed just a week. So yeah, I get there. Everybody's welcoming. They hadn't really seen the war. It's a very clean place. So everything was going really well. And then I visit a different city. It's nice. I go to a theme park. I meet some guys. They're all really nice and cool. I go back to Erbil, which is pretty much the capital of Kurdistan. And I eat at this KFC. And this is maybe day three, maybe day four. But I end up getting the worst food poisoning of my life, worse than anything in India or Pakistan. So I'm kind of just naked on the bathroom floor, vomiting, you know, shit my pants, that sort of stuff. So I've got a flight out, you know, after those 3 days. And I go to the airport with just hoping I can make it through the flight without, you know, vomiting all over the plane or something. And there's like three different security checkpoints you have to go through before you could even get your ticket. I finally get to the third one. You even have to take like a bus to the next terminal. And they fondle me at security. Like they go in depth. They check my backpack, and I've got like my soiled underwear in there that I didn't get the chance to wash yet. And they eventually send me to the next guy, and he asked for my COVID test. And now I'm freaking out because I didn't get a COVID test. I'm like, come on, please. I'm like dying here. Let me go. Turkey doesn't require one. I'm going to Turkey. And this guy's just like, I can't do it. You got to get a COVID test. So I say, at least let me go change the flight. So I changed the flight for like two more days. So I go, leave the airport, and I can't find a taxi out of there. So I have to walk back to, the nearest hotel, and I'm like kind of the only guy on this big highway, and there's like a military base. So there's like choppers flying around me. I'm just sort of like, trying not to shit my pants or vomit. And then I just run into the hotel. And they're like, oh, you're back. And I just ask for the bathroom. I sort of yell at them, bathroom, and they point me to it, you know, let it out. And then I tell them about what happened, and then they tell me where I need to go the next day. And, yeah, then I get out of there. But that was sort of a, you know, something intense to go through on being by yourself. I was still 19, so.
Yeah, what are your parents saying? Are you talking to them during this on WhatsApp? Or, I mean, how are they – do you tell them any of this stuff? Or do you say everything's roses and dandelions? I mean, come on.
Yeah, they got it. I don't really talk to them when I travel. They don't have WhatsApp or anything. So I was just sort of going through it by myself. Just sort of – yeah, I just got through.
They never worried once about you being in crazy spots or no?
I'm sure they worried, but we don't talk about it.
Yeah, it's better. So hopefully they don't listen to this episode. Okay, now we'll do a little fast forwarding because I want to get into some higher overarching themes of all this. So Kurdistan, okay, you did your Middle East, you got your feet wet, and now you're like, fuck it, let's do everything. So you just start hitting the ground and. You know, the Pakistans, the Iraqs, to get into where you're going, interesting stories and ideas or perceptions that were blown on the craziness of the Middle East journey.
Yeah, so Pakistan's definitely interesting because obviously in most ways it's super close to India in terms of culture and everything. But
when you accidentally party a bit too hard and wake up on a plane to Pakistan.
Yeah.
Okay, bro. So when I see, first of all, I gotta hear the story, if it's exaggerated or if it's true. And second of all, when I see a dude like you, you know, you're a younger dude, you know, kind of clean cut, but not like super loud or anything, you know, just like a normal dude you would see. And this dude's in Pakistan, you know, with parties, wearing the traditional outfits. I mean, I'm like, this is out of place. This is crazy. Like, this is great content for sure. But it's hilarious to me. So hold on. What the hell happened here? Pakistan, I got drunk and I'm going to Pakistan?
Yeah. So you kind of need to say something crazy to go viral on TikTok, especially like, I just hated the sound of my voice. So I didn't want to like talk. So I just relied on saying something wild so that I didn't need to do the typical vlog of people like being emotional or something about travel. So yeah, that's not real at all. But that would be a funny story, but you need a visa to go to Pakistan. So yeah. I mean, I've woken up on benches, but I haven't woken up in Pakistan, that's for sure.
Okay. I get it. I understand. But still, my idea of this random Eastern Yankee showing up in Pakistan and wearing the traditional garb and not seeing any other gringos or foreigners is out of place for sure. Do you ever feel that way when you're in these places? Don't you feel like you're all eyes on you or anything?
Yeah, definitely. But some places like Iraq, I keep going back to Iraq, but like nobody gave me a weird look or anything. But in Uzbekistan, people definitely stared, which is weird because for all they know, I could be a Russian guy. And that was kind of the mindset in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, that this guy's just a Russian guy or something. But yeah, Pakistan, I was definitely the center of attention in a lot of circumstances. And in some places, in Pakistan, you don't really want to be the center of attention. I was specifically in Peshawar, near the border with Afghanistan. It's a pretty notorious city in the terrorism circles. And for...
Wait, is this the capital? Why the hell are you there?
I went because it's a notoriety. I kind of just wanted to see what it was like.
Like history, or is like, okay, this is a dangerous region, so I want to do some Kurt Kaz type travel.
A bit of both. I definitely wanted to see what it was like, you know, being so notable for what it's notable for, but also the history is definitely interesting. One of the older, if not oldest, cities in Pakistan. So
I need to be. Hold on. So do you see any other tourists there, or is this place pretty off limits?
Pakistan or Peshawar?
The Peshawar, the area.
No tourists, but Pakistan also, I think I saw maybe like two other tourists the whole time I was there, maybe even one.
Okay. And getting in there wasn't too difficult. You just had to do a visa on arrival, pay what, $80? Same thing?
Yeah, you do an online visa, which is pretty straightforward and simple. Same as India. But they'll just ask if you have like Indian parents, and then the Indian visa will ask if you have any relation to Pakistan. And yeah, if you don't, then you're good.
And no one at the airport is saying like, hey, I need you to be on your toes, you know, make sure you're being smart or anything?
No, they just sort of let you walk in. It's strange.
Okay, take me through this little region. What's going on here? What are you doing? Take me through it.
So Pakistan, I'm just sort of going out around by bus to all the different cities that I want to go to. I don't know if I have like a really strong stomach and I just push the limits, or if I have a really weak stomach, but I spend maybe a fourth of the time, you know, near or on a toilet. But that's the case in a lot of places I go. But I'd say it's because I'm adventurous with the food. And loose with, you know, what they say about the water. And I just think it makes me stronger. But, yeah, I'm not shying away from the food with all the flies on it. So that might have something to do with it. But, yeah, Pakistan, definitely an interesting place. The shalwar kameez, what they wear, very comfortable. Probably the most comfortable thing I've ever had on. And I'm lucky I still have them today. make for good pajamas. It's just not socially acceptable for me to wear one outside. Otherwise, I would.
Yeah, that's interesting that your stomach feels like that. I think I've gotten food poisoning one time, and I'm a big local food eater. Like, I usually Google Translate, hey, give me your best local dish, not just the most expensive one, winky face. I trust you. It becomes a little game with the waiter, and they want you to like the local food, and it's always good. I have some pizza after a game we had actually in Brazil. It was so a lot of dudes got sick. You know, it wasn't some street food that I've eaten all the time, but hold on. So 1/4 of the time you're in the toilet, the other time you're exploring, you're doing things. And okay, I've been around the block. So a lot of what I'm saying now is trying to come from the audience about like, oh my God, aren't the terrorists around? Isn't it dangerous? Like for me, I've learned like 99% of people are decent people. You know, the one time things do go wrong, which can happen, you have to be prepared for it. It is what it is. You chalk it up to the adventure, right? So is this the same mindset in the Pakistan terrorist region? You're not having any issues. Everything is Hakuna Matata.
Yeah, so the thing is, a terrorist attack in the West might be like an opportunity, but I'm not like CIA, like I don't know what I'm saying is true or not, but they'll plan it more elsewhere because in Pakistan nobody's expecting a tourist from America to show up at a certain place. Maybe they'll target a place that's frequented by Westerners, but I mean, just walking around, probably unlikely something bad will happen to you. A lot of that stuff's probably planned in advance. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. Kidnapping, that's something else. But I guess I had never really thought about it. Like when I was in like places the government says it could happen, I'm not consciously thinking about it. Because it seems rare. You know, I'm not going to Haiti or anything. It's just Iraq.
Yeah, I think that's a good mindset. It's like you kind of attract if you're like, holy shit, something's gonna happen bad. You know, I'm worried. You know, you give out that weird vibe. But if you're just lollygagging around with your head up high, it's like the people look at you like, okay, this dude, he must do this. He must be okay somehow. He must know people. Like, why else would he be so free and not worried, right? I've done that a lot in the slums of Southeast Asia, the favelas of Latin America. Some gypsy communities in Europe, and I've had zero issues. I got robbed one time, and it was in the centro of Belo Horizonte in Brazil. And the centros in Brazil are the most dangerous part. Like the favelas are not that bad. Obviously, the rich areas aren't bad, but the cities is where the favela people, you know, do their work for the most part. And I was the only gringo with like 50 Brazilians on a street party outside, hammered. I had shopping bags with me. You know, jewelry on because I was shopping during the day. We just got drunk. And we stayed in the centro with locals I knew for a long time. And some dude just ripped off one of my necklaces and ran off. Like I had lots of cash on me, shopping bags, everything, and that's all he took. So I'm like, okay, let's just keep drinking, right? But I definitely think it's the vibe you give off. You know, if you go into these places like, you know, your head down and whatnot, you know, don't stare people in the eyes and act like a tough guy, but just be like, hey. This is normal for me. Like this is not a big deal, and usually they get a sense of okay, it's probably not the best target to go after. This probably won't go down super well, or it's not worth my time. Because a robber, most of them, you know, some are mentally retarded and crazy, but they want the easiest target, or the kidnapper, you know, wants someone that you know thinks won't cause them the as many troubles. But here's what I caution the people. Is that when the time comes, because it's going to come, is that you need to be mentally, physically, and everything prepared to deal with, you know, that situation. Because, you know, it's going to happen. We just saw Arab. You know that Arab guy, right? The
Yeah,
YouTuber?
the guy
Are
who
you
got
familiar?
kidnapped in Haiti, right?
Yeah. And there's been a lot of rumors that now he's like milking it or it wasn't as serious, but the time was going to come for him. That dude was doing some crazy stuff. And now you're going to Haiti, which is on all these alerts and watches, and you're trying to interview the head gang leader. Of course, like he was probably prepared for it, and he got out of it safe, and so forth. But Yeah, so that's all I warn to people who do this stuff. 99% of the time, I think you're going to be okay if you're not stupid. You have your wits about you, and you have some experience, but you got to be ready for when shit hits the fan.
Yeah, I definitely say looking confident's part of it, but the Middle East, I'd say you don't have to worry at all about robberies or anything like that, and I think the chances of getting kidnapped or something are rather low. I don't know the numbers exactly, but I'd say the Middle East is a lot safer than people think.
They say it's one of the safest regions in the world, no? Besides the terrorist stuff?
Yeah, definitely for, in terms of like the Gulf, especially for like petty theft and robberies. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen there.
Speaking of that, and later on, I want to hear the crazy stories from these adventures, but going through all these Middle Eastern countries, talk to me about Islam and what do you think? It's starting to get really big in the West. You see all these British people converting, you know, Andrew Tate, all the kids that worshiped him are like, oh, Islam strong, Islam, many wives, Islam, everything is safe. We cut your hand off if you steal. There's many stereotypes from the West about the religion. What do you feel after going through these countries about the structure, the society, the culture of an Islamic place?
Heavy question. I think for the most part, it's a great thing. As in terms of like Andrew Tate and that guy Sneeko, I don't know their intentions, but I've seen some of the Sneeko guy's stuff, and I just don't know about that guy. I think he's doing it for all the wrong reasons. Religion's something important to a lot of people. So I don't like to talk about it so much, but for every Muslim I've met has been at 98% or 97%, nothing but amazing, you know? So it's definitely, if it helps people to be, you know, the best person they could be, I think it's a great thing. As for the structure of Islamic countries, that's they tend to be more authoritarian. I don't know if that's a religious thing or a cultural thing, though. So, you know.
Good answer. Good answer. What is it? No, hold on. How blown out of proportion are the stereotypes from the West about the Middle Eastern Islamic faith? Because obviously there's more acceptance in Europe. Now there's a lot of drama because of the immigration issues, because of Israel, Palestine, etc. But how blown up are the perceptions of Islamic people in the Western nations? A lot of people say it's barbaric. It's the worst thing ever. They hate women. They do this. What do you think?
So interesting you used how blown up are their proportions. It's a funny use of words.
Oh, yeah, okay. Freudian slip. No, I have a lot of – so here's my thing. I have a lot of respect for the religion. And I grew up in a Catholic school. I went through the whole little atheist phase. You know, someone didn't survive the whale. This is stupid. It's fake. I got very spiritual, which I still practice a lot of different things with the meditation. You saw me before this doing affirmations, manifestations. So I have a little hippie in me. But I was in Notre Dame in Paris, where you love, before the fire. I'm pretty sure it was the day before or 2 days before. I forgot. But anyways, I was in Copenhagen because I flew out after, and I saw on the news Notre Dame was on fire. And I was like, holy shit. I was just in this beautiful, amazing building. Like I felt something in there, the stained glass. And that struck with me. And ever since then, I've been back to my Christian roots. Do I go to church? Not that much because the whole man-made, you know, corruption thing and so forth. But I went to one in Poland, which was a beautiful experience in Catholic Poland, going through like a brutalistic church experience compared to like more lively in the Midwest and in USA, what I grew up in. So like right now, I identify as a Christian. And I've gotten into, you know, Europe. A lot of it was built on Christianity, especially when Constantine converted the empire. You know, obviously Rome was pagan and so forth, but you know, it's like Richard Dawkins said recently, who's a hardcore atheist forever, I'm culturally Christian because that is Europe. And you know, our buildings and our churches and the vibe and our openness and so I identify as a Christian, okay? And the more and more we go to battle, it seems like, you know, I get stronger and stronger on my Christian beliefs. But I do respect Islam a lot because I think they do a lot of great things. I think they are an antidote to some problems in the West, as we see Andrew Tate yap about constantly, what we see Sneeko talk about. Do I think everything they do is great? No. But I do have a lot of respect. I was in the smallest Tartar community in Europe, or in Poland. You know, Poland's 99% Muslim or Christian, basically Catholic, and they have Tartar Muslims in the Far East because they went to war with John Sobieski, the Polish king, in the siege of Vienna, and stopped the Ottomans from, you know, entering the main heart, the arteries of Europe. So he rewarded the Tartars, who were great cavalry people, land in the Far East, right? And I went to their communities. Sadly, they're dying up. You know, they've lost a lot of people, and there's still a couple little communities there, but it was beautiful. And they've been nothing but good to the Polish people, and they've co-harmony together, right? So yeah. That's my views on the Christian Islam topic, but I'm curious, after going through the Middle East, you know, that's why I'm asking these questions to you.
Yeah, I definitely see it as a positive thing. And that's interesting you said, like, you identify as a Christian, but you don't go to church or anything. Because I feel like something people in America would think is that, like, Islam equals extremism. Whereas in America, a lot of people would identify as Christian, but they don't go to church. And maybe this isn't such a big sin as the Bible makes it seem, or that sort of thing. And I think a lot of people, and obviously more people are, I think, more intense about the religion than would be for Christianity, but there's still a good amount of people who aren't as, you know, extreme about their beliefs. And I think the amount of people who are extreme about their beliefs is low compared to what you would think watching the news in America, especially growing up with the war on terror and everything. So growing up, you'd think everybody over there is some sort of extremist and they want to see everybody dead. But, you know, most of them are pretty moderate people.
Good segue. What is the perception of Americans, besides the gay topic and the promiscuous woman, of the Middle Easterns?
Of the Middle Easterners. So that depends. In Egypt, they sort of see like a wallet with legs in Iraq. So what was interesting in Iraq is that I went to like Fallujah, where I wasn't too keen on saying I was American. So I went with French, and I just said I was French to some people to avoid any unwanted attention. But they were cool with that. And some guy even, I told him, like, oh, I'm American, but I live in France. And he said, just tell people you're French. And I didn't really listen. I told a good amount of people I was American. And the difference was crazy because if I said I was French, they're like, oh, that's cool. Like, welcome to Iraq. And when I said I was American, people would try to buy me stuff. They would be like, oh, you're American. Let me pay for your bus ticket. Here come. I want to buy you some sweets and stuff. And, you know, a lot of the culture is like you fight to pay, right? But it's really impossible in this case to you know, pay. The shopkeeper won't take the money. You could throw it and they'll chase you down to, you know, make sure you have your money. Even if you go like this, like, no.
Wait, tell me. Because you're American, you tried paying for something and they wouldn't allow it.
Yeah.
And Fallujah.
This is just Iraq in general. But, yeah, Iraq in general.
Why? Did they give a reason?
No, it's just sort of like everything's free if you're American. Whereas, like, if I was French, it would be different.
But why do you think this is? Because no one's doing this to me in remote villages in Latin America. But and we didn't we maybe did some CIA stuff down there, but we didn't bomb the shit out of a country. And now like they want to do this. I mean that sounds crazy to me. Why?
Yeah, so the thing is, they have a reputation in America that they know about, right? Iraq has the Iraq reputation. We associate them with 9/11, even though they didn't really do it, and all the bad stuff that happened in the war that we hear about, and obviously the two battles of Fallujah and ISIS. So all that bad stuff for an American to be visiting, I think that's saying something about like the healing of the nation, and also a little bit of it is people, and I say a little bit because it is a little bit, but people were happy to see an American because they really like America for because Saddam Hussein, obviously America took him out, and not a lot of people liked the guy. So they're pretty happy about that.
You felt that on the ground floor, that a lot of them didn't like Saddam.
Yeah, definitely. And I talked to a lot of people about it. And I met one person who liked him, and then maybe like seven who didn't. And that's a lot of them had family that was killed by Saddam. And then if you go in Kurdistan in the north, like they all hate him because of everything he did to the Kurds. So
You weren't in Libya, were you?
no, but I think they just updated their visa policy, so maybe soon.
Because I'm really curious to hear on the ground level the thoughts on Gaddafi, because
Yeah.
so many Westerners or whoever is promoting this stuff, is talking about the good Gaddafi did, and he wanted to create a strong Africa, the African currency, and all the conspiracies and so forth. And obviously, as me, who questions a lot of different things, but who's ultimately glad for the alphabet agencies and for securing world USA dominance and my dollar being strong. Like I have to give him some credit. What is it means to an end or whatever. And sadly, no matter how many people they've hurt, how yuck and evil we've done things in USA, it's benefited us. You can't deny it, right? So, but I'm always curious to see what the other story is, what the other side is. And that's the biggest one on my mind is Gaddafi. I want to know what the hell actually happened there. Especially when the Hillary was laughing about him getting just like freaking the terminated on the street. I mean, that was evil to me.
Yeah.
That felt a little crazy. But okay. My next question here. Okay. And you have time, right? Or you have to be a little French. No, French dinner is in a couple hours, right? You're fine.
Yeah,
You can talk.
is it six? Yeah, we're good.
Perfect. My next question is, why do you think the West is so much more, it depends on what parts, but developed compared to the majority of, the East or the Middle East, Africa? What is the reasoning behind that, you think? So you tell me, oh, Egypt's dirty. A lot of these places are not as run properly, strong men in power. What is your thoughts on that?
So Egypt has the problem of like a huge population all living in one area, and maybe trash collection isn't doing so well. But in terms of like the West, obviously Europe kind of had that breakthrough where they dominated the entire globe, and then America was sort of positioned just to be the superpower of the world just through its geography, its rivers and such. Whereas like Africa doesn't have any deep water ports, and even the longest river, like the Congo or the Nile, and the Niger, the longest rivers in Africa, you can't really ship down them too much. I think there's a lot of rapids, not too many deep water ports. So
Did you read Guns, Germs, and Steel?
no,
Okay.
I watched a real life lore video.
Oh, I've seen a couple of his things. That was good. Okay. Yeah. But no, not talking about places you haven't been. I'm talking about the Middle East, the places you've stepped foot in. You know, you said you were in India. I mean, what the hell? I've heard so many horror stories about India, which I want to go to still because all the ancient history. From the shit you've seen, not from the videos you've watched, why do you think, you know, and it's not everywhere in the West, okay? Because you see the stuff in the Philadelphia streets, you see the stuff in Paris with, you know, craziness. I don't see much in Munich. Munich is freaking nice. But why has the West developed and continuously feels better to live in than most of the Middle East and in places that you've been to that we were discussing?
So you're talking about like culture-wise?
Society. Yeah, functioning, you know, because I can speak a lot about Latin America, about why this chaoticness and craziness compared to, you know, the North Americas and Europe. But you've been to places I haven't, so that's why I'm asking you.
Okay. There's definitely something to do with women involved in society. In some places it's more common, but India, not as many women are involved in society, it seems. You don't see them as much walking around and stuff. That's probably part of it. Children, I think, is another part of it. In a lot of places, contraceptives aren't all too common, it seems. And I think the thought process is that the more kids you have, it's sort of like a lottery ticket, or an investment, even if you can't afford them. Whereas we in the Western world would, family plan, maybe have as many kids as you could afford, at least some of the more responsible people. So I think that's part of it too.
Hold on. You say if women are more a part of the society in the Middle East, it'll be more developed? Why?
Well, I was just talking about India,
Okay.
but yeah, I think in general, women getting involved is a good thing for the economy and such. I mean, I know traditionally in America, the stay-at-home mom thing was big, but I think nothing wrong with both people working, and the woman being outside, I think, says a lot about the safety of an area as well. If it's safe for a woman, that's generally a good sign for most things, because in India, I don't know if you saw recently the Spanish YouTuber couple, they were camping in India, and the wife was, brutally raped by a gang of guys. And I've seen like documentaries that this happens quite often in like India and Bangladesh, and they just underreport it. They don't report it. The police, it just doesn't happen here, you know? So I think that's something important to figure out before development.
Yeah, any traveler, if you ever see like a middle-aged woman jogging in the morning or shit, any time of the day in the neighborhood, you're in a good spot. That's a cliche, but if you can see that somewhere, okay, you don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, and something interesting, people say if you see kids playing in the streets, that's a good sign. In my experience, that's not always a good sign at all.
No, Brazil, the favelas, you see kids everywhere, or you see in Central. Yeah, that's, but they don't harm the kids, you know? But for you, it could be trouble.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so you don't have any concrete reasons to why the Middle East, besides the wars, besides the oil, besides all that, their way of society hasn't necessarily caught up to modernism. And look, I'm not a proponent. It's benefited me, you know, our world we live in now, the globalization, the modernness, internets, everything has made me a great life. But I'm not a proponent against traditionalism, okay? But I've met a lot of people from Iran. I met a lawyer in Phnom Penh, the capital of Cambodia, who escaped and is trying to find online work anywhere she can, and her family got a shit ton of her money taken away from the government because they owned a bunch of land in some place I forgot, and She had no rights, nothing. I mean, total brutality, which she told me, you know? So I'm curious and I need to go. This is the biggest thing I always say and I've learned is like, I need to go see a place firsthand to speak about it and to understand what the hell is actually happening. Because a lot of the times your perceptions blow up. A lot of stereotypes, okay, do come true, but for the most part, you leave the place with a whole fresh new perspective that no YouTuber, no Twitter account, no friend could get through your head.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I was thinking more of like India and some of the places I've been in Africa. As for the Middle East in general, it's much more developed than I expected and what a lot of people would expect, I think. And especially if you go to like the Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, Dubai and Qatar and stuff. But even like Iraq, like I was in Fallujah, very notorious city for being, you know, the hot spot of the war, the insurgency or whatever. But, you know, they're building a new mall and everything's kind of nice. It's relatively clean. So I don't think the standards of living are as bad as a lot of people would expect in the Middle East.
Yeah, besides the Gulf states, though, like the Middle East countries you've been to, like they're clean, they're safe?
Clean? No. Safe? Yeah.
More clean than Ecuador or no?
No.
Really?
Ecuador I found to be very clean. Okay. Whereas I have been to Oman, which is a Gulf place, very clean, but they get the guys from India to sweep the streets.
But okay, where have you been in Latin America besides Ecuador?
Just Ecuador and the Dominican.
So cleaner than the Dominican?
No, I don't think so.
I'm trying to get an idea. Okay.
For like Iraq and Lebanon was pretty clean, I'd say. Maybe on par with the Dominican or Ecuador. But as for like Egypt is not quite like India, but approaching.
See, hold on, because you're in Paris and I've been to Paris. Compare Paris development, cleanliness, safetiness to these Middle Eastern countries.
That's a bit difficult because
some areas are bad, some areas are good. Yeah, I get it. But overall,
I live in kind of a sheltered area in Paris, but I'd say compared to like the outskirts of Paris, it's dirtier for the most part, but somewhere like Beirut actually is cleaner, I'd say. So I'm closer to like a city center Paris, like the 7th near the tower, but.
Okay. Beautiful. I got a question. So how old are you now?
22.
Okay. 22, seeing all these different places, got your brain blown up with perceptions. How do you feel compared, or how do you feel going back home or whatever you're going to do to your peers and to the average American, and how are you going to like deal with it? Because I have a hard time dealing with like people I grew up with, or whenever I do go back home. I haven't gone back home since 2022, and it's just hard to adjust to normal life when you've seen all these different things, you've been through all these different experiences. Tell me how you deal with it.
Yeah, I'd say it is difficult to go home and you have all these unique experiences. It's sort of like I've lived a bunch of different lives, which I know is the cliche, but each place, you know, is a new story. People always ask for the craziest, and it's hard to, you know, think of, you know, one in general. But I'd say it's hard to, people are always interested, definitely, in like hearing about all sorts of different traveling. But as for like connections, I'd say that's probably not a lot of people would relate. I don't think the average American has been to more than 5 places. But I think the thing that's difficult is a lot of people, I'd say, have these ideas in their head that they won't shake, even presented with evidence otherwise, they would say like I don't know, Iraq is terrible, dangerous place, or French people all suck, you know, that sort of stuff. They'd have these notions that even if I've been there and it's not true, you know, they just won't let it go.
Yeah, and that's a tough thing, because I'm very hard-headed, and I think you have to have some sort of ego to survive in this world, even to thrive. I think the ego is a tool, but the more you do, the more you see, the more you realize you have no fucking clue what is going on. There's a famous quote by some philosopher, like, the smarter you are, the more you know, you have no fucking idea what is going on, right? And yeah. I feel that a lot when I go to different places or I have new experience. I'm like, damn, I thought that way before, and now I think this way. So there is something to me about that bubble, okay? That bubble should be somewhat protected. It's good to break it. But if you break it too much, you go fucking crazy, right? And I believe this is why I talked about it a lot. American delusional bubbleism is been very important for us, because it's the reason we went from outcasts, Puritans, losers from Europe, and created a freaking massive empire in 250 years, because we stopped giving a fuck about anything outside of us and focused on the now and focused on what we are doing. And we were delusionally confident. Okay. And that has been very rare throughout history, is putting the blinders on and creating that. So I struggle with that balance about being like, okay, how do I stay confident in this tiny speck of a world that is a tiny speck of this universe, but also try to learn more, right? So the final thing I'm going to ask you is on that topic. After all this traveling, after seeing all these different things, all the experiences, what are your perceptions about America and Americans compared to when you first started traveling?
Oh, that's a good one. When I first started traveling, I sort of had this perception of Americans, I think from social media, of being like almost embarrassed to be an American, like, you know, because you see all these, this stuff people says about, like, oh, American food, and like, Americans have no culture, all that sort of stuff. Americans are rude, stupid. And I was like, oh yeah, the rest of those guys are stupid. Yeah, you're right. And now I've sort of become more nationalistic, I think, because I've seen that most people, no matter where you are in the world, are the same. And that's really just like an egocentrism thing that they have, that like, oh, Americans suck. No, I think we're one of the better places to exist. And I think Americans are more open than other cultures and countries. I think our food is better. I think, yeah, just all sorts of stuff like this. I'm definitely more okay with being American now, and happy about it.
Interesting. Really interesting. You hear a lot about the super proud American person who starts traveling, and then, oh, I hate America, it's the worst thing ever. And then after a couple of years, they keep traveling, they realize all the pros about USA. And it's the same for every other country. You know what I mean? Like, you leave and say, it's stupid. Why do we do this way? Why do we eat this? You know, why does my people, whatever, whatever. And then you learn to appreciate where you're from, right? The grass is always greener, you know, that type of mindset. And that's interesting that you came out of this, or starting with like, oh, Americans are fat and stupid and delusional and retarded, and then you came to appreciate what makes us special, right? I believe we're the land of extremes, okay? We have the best of stuff and the worst of stuff, and it's the reason we put the man on the moon. It's the reason Hollywood dominated. It's the reason why we have so much money, this massive military. It's the reason why we're uncultured. It's the reason why we're fat. Culturally pretty fucking stupid, historically stupid, you know, don't understand, you know, the arts of life or whatever the rich Euros have to say. But good. Awesome. What is in store for It's a Little World? You're going back home, you're living in Paris. Tell me the philosophy. And then you're just TikToking. I know you just started the Instagram. Tell me what the hell you are doing in the future, young man.
What does the future have in store? That's a good question. I'd like to go back home for a little bit and work save up my money and see if I could make something happen in this summer. As to where, I'm looking at a few different places. Obviously, we mentioned Libya earlier. Libya, I'd like to get back to Latin America. It's been a long time. So Colombia or Peru, maybe the Amazon region.
Brazil, my amigo. Go to Brazil. I'll show you a good time.
Other than that, East Asia, maybe Afghanistan. So we'll see what the money is like and what's happening. And then I'd like to get back out there as soon as I can. As for, I'm mostly on TikTok now. I would like to start a YouTube, but something about filming in public, more and more I'm getting more okay with it, but it's definitely embarrassing.
Yeah, you just get over it. It stops mattering. You just got to do it. And Hakuna Matata. But business, so you're studying? Or what the hell were you studying? You were in Ecuador. This went out the way. Are you finishing a degree, or are you just saying, fuck the school, I don't need it anymore, or what?
Yeah, I don't know. At this point, I was doing mechanical engineering for, like, maybe a semester and then, like, a few years of journalism. And I didn't finish that because I really hated it. And so now I'm doing business, but we'll see what the future has.
Yeah, pump out some content in this little world. I think opportunities will come and follow your instincts like you have, and everything's worked out. Beautiful story. I'm glad we got to finally meet. I look forward to seeing more of what you got in store. And enjoy Paris, my friend. Enjoy the good food, the uptight culture. Come on, the Parisians are pretty uptight. They think they're pretty cool, no?
Very.
Okay. So it's not just the stereotype, the Parisian attitude, but I'm glad everything's working out for you, and we stay in touch, okay?
Definitely. Nice talking to you.
All right, everyone else, live bold. I'm almost done with this Aperol. I've refilled it a couple times, so it's a Wednesday. Don't worry about it. It's Europe. Ciao, ciao.